T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Dusty and Friends.
Oregon head football coach Dan Lanning. Where did that love for the game start for you?
Yeah, you just saying it, man, makes like the hairs stand up on my arms. There's a lot of sports out there where you can be an individual. That's not the case in football. It's the ultimate team sport. It takes the 11 guys on the field, but every guy that's on the roster on the sideline as well.
This is Dusty and Friends.
Oh, man, I'm all right. They've never been better yet.
Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
Let's go.
Ooh, yeah.
Good afternoon, happy Thursday to you, the 12th of May, 2022. Dusty Hera, producer Ryan Buckley in the building today. What's up, Buck Truck?
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm better than Golden State Warrior fans and Rye Guy from the Bay. Hey-o.
My goodness.
We'll get your thoughts on your Warriors. We'll have you turn your hat backwards and go Rye Guy from the Bay later.
Just let me really bro out.
Date Mike. You're going to go all date Mike on us where you turn into a Golden State fan and you explain away why everything is okay for the Golden State Warriors and nobody should panic.
I hate to hate to tell you this. I do not know that everything is okay, and I might be panicking just a tad, but we will get to that.
Our friend of the day today is a local guy. His name is Joe Bushman. He's the head football coach at Lewis and Clark College, right up the hill right here on Palatine Hill, right behind us on the Willamette River. He is an awesome dude, has a great story. He played at Lewis and Clark and Willamette University. He would then went on to be the head coach at Lake Ridge Central Catholic, won a state title at Clackamas High School, and then jumped into the college ranks, and now he's the head coach taking over for Jay Losey. Up on Palatine Hill. So Joe's going to come in and hang out with us here. Division III football is a different world. And this is why, you know, I love the stories and I love that level of football, is because it's non-scholarship. For everybody that is sitting there and goes, I hate name, image, and likeness, entitled kids, this is non-scholarship football. It is truly, you're recruiting kids that they're playing because they love the game of football.
Mm-hmm.
And it is and especially when you're at a school like Lewis and Clark and you're in that league, the Northwest Conference, where it's very unique up here in the Pacific Northwest, because we only have two FCS programs in Portland State and Eastern Washington. In the Pacific Northwest, we only have two Division II programs in Central Washington and Western Oregon. The rest of the schools are NAIA in Division III, which means the Division III and the NAIA schools are really damn good at football.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of talented football players that they're not, as we were talking to Alex Brink yesterday, they're not Power 5 or Group of 5 or even FCS level. That means D2, D3. There's a reason why Linfield is winning titles. Southern Oregon has won a title. Eastern Oregon has recently been in the semifinals. Central Washington and Western Oregon are rising powers in the Division II level. Well, Central Washington definitely is. Western Oregon has their peaks and valleys, right? And they kind of ride that roller coaster. There's a lot of talent for these levels of football here. And it's got its deep tradition. You know, Willamette has won a title before. It's a very unique situation here in the Pacific Northwest. And Joe's story is an incredible one, because you get guys like Joe Bushman, and we'll let him tell the story himself, that the path that they were heading down is completely different than the one that he's on and the one he chose right now. So Bushman will join us at 1 o'clock. I'm looking forward to it.
And you know, you talk about the players and the passion that they have at that level. I think in general, someone with a path like his has to come with a lot of passion themselves, because
absolutely,
you know, to kind of climb your way through the ladder of going from high school to college ranks, that's a big jump. I don't want to say just anybody can coach college or high school football, but there are thousands and thousands and thousands across the country. There are so many fewer head college coaches. It is tough to make that jump, and you have to be really committed and really into it. And so I love it when people are able to kind of climb that ladder and make the big leap from one level to the next. And so I'll be excited to hear about
that. Yeah, he's awesome. He's an awesome dude too. And he gets it, man. He really does get it. And we have some great coaches at that small college level here in this area. I mean, we truly do. You think of like the guy that he's replacing is Jay Losey, who he came from Oregon State, right? He was Mike Riley's right-hand man. And actually now he is currently with the New Jersey Generals of the USFL with Mike Riley. And so like,
I believe he coached one Will Darkins.
He did. Jay Losey did. Yeah. And Losey won a national title at Linfield before joining Mike Riley at Oregon State. So you got really good coaches across that level and in this area here. And there's hurdles, man. There's a lot of hurdles. My dad used to coach up on the hill and coach Joe even at Lewis and Clark. So it is there's hurdles academically that you don't really have to fight unless you're at like Stanford or Northwestern. But these ones are even more pronounced because you're not really getting very many guys in, you know. You know, you get, even at Stanford, you get the wink, wink, nod, nod. Hey, can we get this guy in? You don't really get those at this level. It's hard. It's hard to sneak those guys past administration when you have one of the most academic stringent universities or colleges in the area, in the country for that matter. So that's our friend of the day, Joe Bushman. He'll join us coming up at 1 o'clock today. Not programming note, happy birthday to my brother. It's my brother's birthday today.
Oh, cool.
Big ups to you, brother. Happy birthday, Josh. You got to get those out of the way, you know?
Yeah, of course. I don't have one of those shout outs today. I got nothing.
You got no shout outs?
No, not that I can think of. Well, I mean, it's not what is today. Today is the May 12th. Yeah, I don't got anything.
Well, you're wearing your NFT shirt.
I am wearing an NFT shirt.
How you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
You're okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to make it.
All right. Yeah. Bit tough day in the crypto and NFT game.
Tough week.
Yeah.
Luckily not holding Luna. You holding any Luna?
I don't know what that means.
It was a cryptocurrency that was trading at $100 per coin, and in 3 days has gone to 1 cent per coin.
That's not good.
So if you were holding Luna, you're not feeling great.
I did. I was not holding
Luna, so I'm just fine.
Look, and I get it. Like, I know that there's a lot of people taking shots at the cryptocurrency and doing the victory laps and the I told you shows. I am not going to be a person that does that because I know a lot of people invested in those. And look, investing in something, it takes a lot of faith, and it is a gamble of sorts, you know? And it's a volatile game.
I mean, it's not all that different. Yeah, it's a different way that people try to invest and make money, and it's not for everybody. But you know, you remember like the subprime crisis with all the homes when everybody was buying that wasn't qualified or shouldn't have been buying homes and overextending themselves with real estate. Like, that stuff happens all the time, but this is just another iteration of that. I think there's still some smart money there, but some people are getting cleaned out this week.
Oh boy. All right. Well, that sucks for those folks. I never understood the crypto game, so I never really got into it. It was explained to me, and I still didn't understand it. And I feel a lot more comfortable now that I wasn't just like, because I had buddies that were like, yeah. And I was like, oh, damn, they're making a killing off it. And they still might, and they may.
Yeah, and I have some but who I'm still like, have because they got in it early enough that they're still hundreds of percentage points up because they started in like 2017.
Golly.
That doesn't mean it can't all go to zero, as we've seen with some.
No. Do you remember like when it all started though, and like the whole thing of the first thing purchased with Bitcoin was a pizza.
Yeah. And it was like, and I think, and wasn't it like, didn't they spend like 30 Bitcoin on it or something like that?
Or I don't know. That pizza place, like, though, they're feeling real good about that trade. Oh, man.
Real life utility, baby.
Yep. All right. So, well, and it seems like, you know, I was reading this article yesterday. I live the Peloton life.
Oh, you do?
I do. I love Peloton. Like, I am non-paid spokesperson.
I think I would love Peloton if it didn't cost me so much money.
Yeah. Well, and when you have, like, my wife is the one who got me hooked on it. Because, look, I am not, and it is not just bike rides. They have, like, the strength classes, and I'm a big stretching is life guy.
Okay.
There's stretching classes on there, too.
Oh, nice. So I had never really... I'm not exactly limber or flexible and have never really been a stretching guy. Anything resembling yoga or anything like it has always seemed like really just more inconvenient than anything else. And
to stretch?
Yeah. I just don't like I don't like it. I'm not flexible. I haven't been, like, don't make me. It's not fun. But I did sustain a back injury in like January that required me to get some physical therapy. And now I do a bunch of back stretching and it feels really good. And I'm very much a stretching guy now.
Really?
Yeah.
You're just a big stretcher. I love stretching. It's awesome.
It feels great.
I always would get this because when I coach track and even when I get like, you know, a receiver will be like, what do I need to get faster? And it's like, well, one, speed is largely genetic, but if you want to, you know, get faster with what you have to work with, you need to be flexible.
Yeah.
Like in speed is flexibility and it is range of motion and it is being malleable. And that is something that you want to be able to do. Cause and the reason why like I'm team Peloton now is that it gives me structure to work out with, you know, and, I just, for so long, I just didn't do anything and just totally let my body just bleh. And so I'm like finding myself like, it's so stiff getting out of bed and my back hurts and I feel great. I'm back to stretching again. But anyways, how'd we get on that? I just saw an article that they were tanking too, because now after the pandemic, everybody's like, wait a minute.
Oh yeah. They got like,
I don't want to work out anymore.
Cleaned out, wiped out. I mean, I also think that the markets, they kind of just hit their cap of like what market saturation, like anybody who would want a Peloton and could afford one just has one now.
Yeah.
So like now what do you do? I mean, you have to go into other programming and stuff like that. And so I remember some people saying the best thing for them would be to get acquired by another company. But it's like the demand for it is suddenly just disappeared.
Yes. But that's like one of the things that I'm sitting there and it's like, to the point of all my buddies that bought crypto and those that are in crypto and believe in it, you know, that's what I go to is like, I didn't buy it because I didn't like believe in it. Now that I've seen like this Peloton dip, like I'm like, I'm going to buy some of that because I believe in the product.
If
you believe in the product and you think it is a great one, then it's a lot easier to just kind of stick with it, you know, and just say, I understand why people invest into the crypto game, but I just was never comfortable in it. And it sucks to kind of see people that are like taking it in the shorts now.
Well, and I have friends who are right now, they still have that conviction and they're like, yeah, I'm buying back in as we speak. You know, I dabbled in some of it and I was, you know, up in, but I got rid of some Bitcoin back when it was up at like 58 and now it's down at like 28. So, I might even get back in to some Bitcoin, but, yeah, we don't need to talk about our financial portfolios.
No, let's talk about it, Buck. This person says Peloton is the new Nordic track.
Oh, I remember the Nordic track.
Nah, yeah. It's a tough one. One, the bike, you don't even need the bike. Like, I use the bike way less than I use anything else on that app. My wife, she crushes the bike. That damn bike. That is a killer, especially like when you have like you're going through it and your ego gets in the way and you're sitting there like, I could do this. And there's like, you know, like a 5'1", 130 pound, you know, chick who's like, go, you can do it. You know, we're cranking up.
And aren't
60.
There like leaderboards and stuff that are like motivating you? Like, yeah, some other people with less impressive profiles are like kicking your butt on there.
Oh, yeah. Like, you mean like Psycho Mama for Coffee 338?
Sure. Yeah.
Who's
yeah.
like, it says like female 57 from Nebraska.
And you're she's like, just like whooping your tail.
She just cruises right past you. Like, what? No, not today, Coffee Mama. Yeah, no, the ego gets in the way and then you're just crushed and defeated by the end of it.
Yeah.
That's
but isn't
life
that also
I
part of the goal? Like, I personally have always felt like I was always in the best shape of my life when I was playing sports where I was forced into doing the conditioning. Like, I'm just not going to go and condition myself the same way that, like, a coach is going to be like, no, like, run that again, run it harder.
Yeah, I had that moment when we were doing, like, a timed run in college. And
I've heard this story from
track,
you. I like this.
And I was running, and I had this thought in my mind where I was just like, I hate this. I hate running. And I finished and I got done, and I was like, I think I'm done with track like forever. Like, it was in my mind, I was running and I was coming back, and I was just like, I hate this.
And that's so insane to me.
I do not like running.
Not that you would come to that realization, but that it wouldn't have been something that maybe came up like during the off season or like that you had contemplated for a while. Mm-mm. And then finally, like, you had a conversation with the coach and you're like, you know what? I'm just not sure. You're just like, the moment hit you mid-exercise and just peace out forever.
Like, we had to run. We had this run where we were like, you had to run like 3 miles out. And you had to be there in like 18 minutes in so it was like, you're running like 6 minute miles. Right. And like the goal was that once you got there, okay, you had to get back to campus. And it was like a timed challenge. So every minute that you're over, you have 1 minute less. And then and I was running there and I was like, what am I doing? This is not fun for me anymore. And that was the moment I realized like, I don't, not worth it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you're essentially now explaining the Anchorman scene where they're talking about the new trend of jogging, where apparently you just run for an extended period of time.
Yeah, and I was not down anymore. I was
and I was never down in the first place, but your realization it really was a peculiar one.
It was mid workout. It happened to me.
Oh, hey, we gotta go.
Yep, we do. Let's get to this. Choke jobs and no shows. They're bad for one side, but they're really good for the other. And we got both last night. This is Dusty and Friends on the Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Leading 93-79 last night with 10 minutes and 19 seconds to go, the Boston Celtics blew their 14-point lead and fell to the Milwaukee Bucks 110-107. I mean, this is what defines the playoffs, right? Is heroic efforts, epic choke jobs, no shows, and playing out of your pants, right?
Yep. Yep, you're right. That is what makes it great, is that what we are expecting almost never happens, and even when something is going away we might expect, it gets flipped on its head in a second.
And we got both of them last night.
Yep.
We got both of them last night. And TNT's doubleheader, it gave us an epic choke job at home. The Boston Celtics, which heading into that game were 30-6 in game fives when the series was tied at 2 in their home arena. 30-6. They're up by 14 points with 10 minutes and 19 seconds to go. And the meltdown was spectacular. And it wasn't just that the Celtics melted down. I thought in large part there were long stretches of that fourth quarter when the 10-19 started and the comeback started happening where I was sitting there going, okay, this is good for Ime Udoka, first year head coach in this young core. They're not just sitting there and panicking and saying, no, we need to start chucking up threes and get out of our comfort zone. In fact, they didn't attempt a single three pointer in that final 10-19, which you could say is one part playing not to lose, but the other part that they were doing, and I thought was a good part, was the Boston Celtics said, no, we need to get quality shots. And it's not like they weren't getting quality looks and shots. Heck,
not making them.
They shot 50% even in that final 10-19. What happened is the Milwaukee Bucks went in fuego. That they went 6-for-6 from three pointers. They went 5-for-6 from the free throw line in that final 10-19. And oh, by the way, that one miss, Bobby Portis came out of nowhere and tipped it back in, right? They had 7 offensive rebounds, and this is where Boston got killed. It was 7 offensive rebounds from the Milwaukee Bucks in that final 10 minutes. The only 5 total rebounds from the Boston Celtics. Again, Milwaukee had 7 offensive rebounds, 14 total rebounds in the 10 minutes. The Boston Celtics only had 5 total rebounds.
That's a problem.
That's a massive problem.
And that, I mean, people say this. I do think it's true, especially late in games, but rebounds are hustle stats. You know, rebounds are who is going and getting after it, who still has juice left at this point in the game. And for the Celtics to be up 12 going into the fourth on your home floor in a swing game and to have it end like that, what a gut punch. I don't know how you come back from that going to Milwaukee now.
Well, so you have this element in the, well, how do you get back out of that, right? You're down in a 3-2 hole heading to Milwaukee for game 6. There's a reason why when a series is tied at 2, the winner of game 5 goes on to win the series 82% of the time. Right. It's because that game is a gut punch. And especially when it happens the way that it happened and now momentum squarely in Milwaukee's corner and they get to go home. Right. They get the luxury of playing in Milwaukee for that game 6. It was a heroic effort too by 2 guys. I mentioned Bobby Portis already. But as the game got tighter, you saw that, you know, that effort, that hustle, those hustle stats that you were talking about, they really shined. And the 2 guys that's what defines them are Bobby Portis and Drew Holiday. And in the final 42 seconds of the game, Drew Holiday has a 3-pointer, a block, and a steal, right? You have Bobby Portis, who has an offensive rebound off a missed free throw, put back, okay? And then he had the assist to Drew Holiday on the 3-point shot. So if you look at, and that's in the final 42 seconds, those 2 guys made all of the clutch plays. I still don't know how Drew Holiday got the block and then contorted his hand around to like palm it and keep it inbound and
that
throw it
wild
off of Marcus Smart.
I mean, he made it look too easy. It was very impressive.
Because he was coming from behind Marcus Smart, gets the block from behind, which usually that just goes out of bounds, right? And it kind of got hung up and then he curls his wrist around and just throws it right off Smart. It was an incredible effort. And then
it was a heady play too.
And then, yeah, the basketball IQ to say, I got this, throw it back off. And then the steal at the end of the game. I don't know if you saw any of the replays of this, but as Marcus Smart was coming up the left side of the court or the near side, as you're watching TV, right? There was a wide open lane because Drew Holiday jumps, Marcus Smart, there was a wide open Jason Tatum on the right sideline, the top sideline. And if they get that pass, if Drew Holiday doesn't time that at the right time, there is an easy pass over to Jason Tatum and he would have gotten a clean look. Who knows if it goes in and we have overtime or not. But just the timing of it, again, that's the basketball IQ of Drew Holiday.
And I saw a good little breakdown of that play by Jay Williams this morning. And basically, he was saying that it's like the split second that Drew realizes that Marcus Smart can't get his head around fast enough to see the open guy. And that's the difference. Because realistically, he shouldn't leave it to where Tatum's wide open, but if Marcus isn't going to see him and he can get there in time, it's risky, but it's a championship play if you pull it off.
Brutal. And that was brutal. That was absolutely brutal. And now they head back tomorrow. You've got a game 6 in Milwaukee. All the momentum is squarely in the Bucks' corner. Momentum is still with the Golden State Warriors as they hold a 3-2 series lead. But oh my goodness, how does a team up 3-1 get beat by 39 points? Here's Buck with SportsCenter. All right, 25 minutes from now, we'll be joined by Joe Bushman, head football coach, Lewis and Clark College. He's got an awesome story. Grew up here in the area. he was the quarterback of the Benson Techmen. And then went
the
on.
Techmen?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then went on to play at Lewis and Clark and Willamette Colleges here in the area, and then coached high school football for a long time, won a state championship at Clackamas, now is the head football coach at Lewis and Clark. He's going to join us at the top of the hour. Buck, are you worried?
Sure am.
Your Warriors last night.
So I will say this. I am concerned, and that constitutes being worried as well. I'm not going to go as far as saying I'm panicked. Because I still think they can win the West. I still think they could even win the NBA Finals.
Okay.
But what happened last night is of great concern.
Yes, because last night
shouldn't happen to a championship caliber team facing another team that's missing their best player and an MVP candidate.
100%. Because, like, what? And we said this after, you know, game 4, which was Steve Kerr does not mean more to the Warriors than Ja Morant does.
No.
To the Memphis Grizzlies.
No.
Yet the way you saw those two games play out in game 4 and game 5, it sure as heck looks like it. And they were able to get it back on the rails for game 4.
Barely, but they did.
But what we saw in game 5 was they came out and they were just as flat. And then they rolled over. Like, that fight just wasn't there. If I'm a Kings fan, I'm a little worried. A little worried of Mike Brown. But I'm just sitting there and I'm going, all right. Turn that corner, turn that switch on. And when you have a, you know, and we talk about this all the time where, I said it the other day, what I appreciate about what we saw from the Miami Heat and the Phoenix Suns the other night is that the Warriors broke our brains into thinking that, hey, you can just shoot your way back into it, right? Mm-hmm. When the reality is you need to go and what wins in the playoffs is suffocating defense and easy opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. And for the Golden State Warriors for so many years, the easiest opportunity was Steph and Clay on the perimeter, right? And they were just knocking
everything
down.
And then taking advantage when opportunities are presented to you, like the other team's star player being out.
And that's why I was okay with what Boston was doing in that fourth quarter, because they were trying to create those easy looks. They just weren't converting.
Yeah.
And what was happening was effort on the other end of the floor was allowing second opportunities for Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Warriors last night, you had their regular rotation, like their numbers were actually propped up by the scrubs who came in at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So their regular rotation players of Steph, Clay, Draymond, Poole, Otto Porter, Wiggins, and Kuminga, right?
Yeah.
They went a combined 8 of 30 from 3.
I know at one point it was like, and it was worse than that. It was like 3 of 26 or something.
Those,
like that. It was really bad.
Those seven guys shot 26% from 3. And it was the guys coming in who usually aren't playing that actually brought that number up to what I think they ended up like 30-something% from 3. It was atrocious last night. And they weren't just taking what was easy, because nothing was easy in that game. And I credit Memphis a ton for that. You don't have a 55-point lead and it be a fluke,
no,
right?
No, and that's the thing. And they should have been the ones who were deflated, because they controlled most of the previous game in Golden State's house and still had to walk away with the loss and being on the brink of elimination. And so credit to Taylor Jenkins and that staff and for those players – for not having Ja Morant to go out there with them and still just put a hurt on a team who a lot of people are now favoring to win the West or even the championship.
Oof, that was one heck of a beatdown.
And the lifelessness is what bothers me from Golden State, is that it wasn't, like you said, it looked like they packed it in early. I mean, the box score will show you how much those guys played. Their best players played for like 25 minutes. I mean, they were done early in this one. And I guess maybe you think we're not going to shoot our way out of it tonight, or we don't have it tonight. But you really don't have that luxury past last night's game. You can't do that in a game 6 or 7.
And this is where it's even more confusing, is we see this all the time in the postseason. You get that inspired effort when the star player's out. One, you get the effort from your guys that are 2 through 15 on your roster because, Ja's out. We need to pick up the slack. And there's also that team changes stylistically. And in the middle of a playoff series, that's a dramatic turn, mm-hmm. because you're changing everything you do from stopping Ja Morant to, all right, how are they going to play this one out? The most concerning part, if you're a Warriors fan, is that rolled over from game one and they got better in game two.
Yeah.
You had an opportunity to adjust and you didn't, right? And you just rolled the ball out. And this is what be concerning, is that, you hear Draymond after the game saying, we're going to be fine. We're going to whoop that trick when we go back, in game six. Are you?
And that was the thing. I mean,
is that really going to happen?
And I heard Klay Thompson say it after the game. He said, we came in here tonight thinking we were going to close this thing out. And obviously we were a shell of what we were supposed to be, but we're going to go home thinking we're going to close this thing out. And I'm like, well, something's going to have to change, because clearly showing up thinking you're going to close it out just is not enough.
Yeah, it got ugly.
And I guess the thing for the Warriors and me as a Warriors fan that I've always believed is the magic key for them in the playoffs is always, what do you do when the three-point shot isn't there for you? Do you have the answer defensively and for manufacturing layups and other points like that? That has to be an option, because there are going to be nights when your collective of your rotation are just cold like they were, and you're going to have answers that don't lead you to being down 55.
I think right guy from the Bay is a little panicky.
Concerned.
Right now it's here.
Concerned.
All right. Panic button. 1 to 10. Where are you at?
No, not near. It's not a panic. I would say
panic meter.
Yeah, maybe a 3 or something. I mean, I think they will get through this series, and I think they can beat Phoenix even if they're a little hit and miss, but I think that's a dangerous game to play. I think they're going to have to tighten things up if they want to be a contender.
503-250-1080. That is the Fan text line. Hey, the D1 Council is having a vote over the weekend. This could have major implications, especially for the Pac-12. Talk about it next. This is Dusty and Friends on the Fan. All right, this could be big for the Pac-12 and college football as a whole. Remember when the Big 12 kind of had their big split up? It was, without 12 teams in the Big 12, they couldn't play a conference championship game until, TCU and West Virginia were officially added. And now you're sitting there at 10. You can't have a conference champion that has held the Big 12 back. And now there is movement to where the Division I Council is going to have this weekend, to where divisions in college football are going to be dissolved. According to Brian Fisher of the mm-hmm. Athlon Sports, divisions are no longer going to be a qualifier for you to have a conference championship game. So the Pac-12 North and the Pac-12 South, in theory, could go away, disappear. And you could have a different model at play, to where we've seen so much lopsidedness, right?
Yeah.
The Pac-12 is a great example of this. And the Big Ten is one as well, where how many years has it been Oregon and Stanford mm-hmm. have been the best two teams, and it is not even close in the conference, yet they don't play in the conference championship game. And it's a black eye for the conference when you have your conference champ have a lesser opponent and they're not dominant in that game.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that play out before. This from Brian Fisher comes on the heels of the ACC yesterday announcing, which I think is really cool, that they want to go to a 3-5-5 model for their football schedules, which is three opponents that will be permanently on your schedule.
Okay.
And then every year you play five of the other teams in your conference, right? Okay. And the third five in that is, in a five-year period, you will play every single team in the conference.
Okay.
So 3-5-5 is you have an eight-game conference schedule, three are against a permanent opponent, and then five are against somebody else.
Okay.
The Pac-12 sets up perfectly to do this on their own, because remember, the North and South were split up the way they are, with the Bay Area schools in the Northwest schools. So everybody's guaranteed at least one game in California every year, right?
Right, right.
That was a big bone of contention, not really realizing that in the day and age where you can be on TV all the time, it really doesn't matter.
Right.
Right. And so if you pod all of the schools in the Pac-12, they're already clustered together where you have those three opponents that you want on your schedule every year. So for Oregon, it would be Oregon State, Washington, Washington State.
Yep, no question.
Right? You put all the California schools in their own pod.
Yep.
And then the Arizona schools with the mountain schools, Utah and Colorado.
Yep. It's a very natural fit.
It is a natural fit to have that as your, okay, you have these pods, and then if you want to create your schedule further, you just do crossovers, right?
Of course,
with the other two divisions. Mm-hmm. And you fill out your conference
schedule. And every other year you're playing home away.
And so it fits, and it works very easily and very smoothly. John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News, who covers the Pac-12 better than anybody else, he said Pac-12 presidents are meeting this weekend. They will not vote on dissolving the North and South, but that will be part of their discussions, is going to be whether or not they go to a divisionless North versus South, or divisionless Pac-12, get rid of the North and South for the 2023 season.
I didn't think potential division dissolution would have my interest piqued, but it is. I'm into this.
The big thing about it is, if you have a conference where you have two clear-cut teams, you can have them at
the very
last statement.
Yeah.
That everybody in college football sees.
Well, and it also then teams who maybe lose one or even two games early aren't knocked out of the race, because you can still take care of your business. And if you can end up second overall, then you can still be in that spot.
This text at 503-250-1080 says, I don't see how eliminating divisions helps at all. Playing someone you've already played in the conference championship game is dumb. That is, so the rematch, and we have the whole rematch scenario, it plays out. If you are in the Pac-12, though, take, you know, in the early, remember when back-to-back years Oregon played UCLA?
Yeah.
In the Pac-12 title game? Well, they'd already played them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've seen this before. Well, there's just this past year. Well, we've already seen Oregon play Utah.
Well, yeah, we saw them get smoked by Utah, play another opponent, and then get smoked by Utah again.
And that is where you can say, all right, we are setting up our two best teams, because you can't avoid a rematch every single year.
And there are going to be years that just has to be the case. You have to have that rematch.
And what you would want, though, is if you, instead of that, have the two best teams in your conference play.
Mm-hmm.
Have the two best teams in the conference play, no matter whether or not they've played this year or not.
Right.
Because that would be great for the Pac-12 to actually have another ranked opponent win or loss, right?
Well, and helps. I mean, it also, when we get to the point where we're auto bidding all the conference champions for the playoffs, which I think is inevitable, it also puts the strongest candidates in that game.
And how great would it be if you had the War for the Roses, and then part two is your conference championship game a week later? I mean, that is, you're backing them up, but if you had a rivalry game.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it, like winners going to the Rose Bowl. Sign me up for that. Yeah. I mean, I'll probably hate it when the time comes and we actually get it. And it's like, we just saw this game last week.
Why would we do it again?
But in future me, that's the problem for future me. Right now me is sitting there and saying, yes, I would want that, because if it's the two best teams in the conference, that's what you should have leading into a conference championship game.
Agreed.
It is 100% the best thing for your conference to get another team in. And then it also eliminates the shoulda, coulda, wouldas, right? Oh, they played, you know, so-and-so played in week one or week three, four, whatever. They're a completely different team now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we could have Oregon Stanford is a prime example of this. Stanford would always be peaking at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a different team than when Oregon would get them in late September, or early October. And then by the time conference championship weekend rolls around, Oregon may have gotten them in week one or week four or whatever, the first time they played, it's a different story in week 13, 14 of the college football season.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm on board with this, and this will be an interesting one to see. The ACC is about to dissolve it, and I also think it opens up the door for the Pac-12 to officially say we're going to an 8-game conference schedule.
And that, to me, is the sweet spot anyways. I just think that that is how that should be done.
Yep. Yeah, what, eight? Four non-cons?
Yeah.
Yeah. And make sure you mandate, and this is what needs to happen. If this is going to happen and the Division I council is going to do it, how about we start mandating some uniform scheduling, right?
So that's
where
the thing
you only
is, like,
get one FCS.
Everyone complains about how the SEC does this with them scheduling 4 non-conferences, 8 league games, and one of those non-conferences in the middle of the season, which is essentially turns into kind of a get right week, a get healthy week, and an easy W in the middle of the schedule. Like, I don't think that should necessarily be that structure should be. I don't want to say shouldn't be allowed, but I would prefer you do that earlier in the season and play your schedule against your league late in the season. But if they're not going to regulate that, then the Pac-12 should be doing it too. Because everyone complains that it's too easy for the SEC. Well, they're being the best at the current system. So we should also be doing that out here, or we should mandate or regulate that kind of scheduling won't be.
Boy,
something that you can do.
We still don't know a lot about George Kolovkoff as the commissioner of the Pac-12, but I can say one thing with assurance that I am glad that he is the conference commissioner over Larry Scott with all the changes that are happening.
Yep.
Because I don't think the Pac-12 would be forward thinking at all in them. And there was always a reluctance and unwillingness to change with Scott as commissioner. George Kolovkoff, he at least is willing to think outside the box, and he's even said, like, hey, we need to consider joining what the other teams are doing.
Hey, what is Merton Hanks up to? Wasn't he, like, named the Pac-12's, like, director of football or something like that? Didn't he have a football-specific role for the conference? What is he actually doing?
I don't know anymore.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm going to look into that.
I totally forgot that.
Remember,
he was,
like, they hired him. He was working with the NFL as a VP of sorts.
And he was like a catch-all for everything football in the conference, from officials to liaison for coaches.
Yeah. Wonder if he factors into this. Love good old Merton.
Well, as long as he wants to go to 8 conference games, I'm on board with that, whatever Merton Haynes is doing.
Yeah, we agree.
All right. Our friend of the day is Joe Bushman. He's a head football coach at Lewis and Clark College right here. It's a unique setup as downtown Portland. You got a college campus just right on top of the Palatine Hill there. Coach Bushman joins us next. This is Dusty and Friends on the Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.